And hello, everybody. I'm Ben Swan, in for Rick Sanchez. It is an image many thought we'd never see. Julian Assange walks free, the WikiLeaks founder striking a deal with U.S. authorities, bringing an end to an over 10 years long legal battle. But there has to be a catch. What is the motive behind this unprecedented move by the White House? We're digging into all the details. This is Direct Impact. Again, Julian Assange is free. That is the headline today. The founder of WikiLeaks set to return to his home country of Australia very soon, following his release from a UK prison on Monday. Assange, who shot to worldwide fame in 2010, is alleged by the DOJ to have orchestrated the biggest security breach in U.S. military history. They say with the aid of Chelsea Manning, then Bradley Manning. These revelations lifted the veil on the U.S. military-industrial complex, exposing war crimes and atrocities. Investigators say that Assange's actions broke laws meant to protect sensitive information and put the country's national security at risk. Julian Assange long maintained that he was a journalist, simply publishing classified documents that he received from a source. Nevertheless, he was charged by the U.S. unprecedentedly under the Espionage Act, sparking a fierce legal battle against extradition that now, after 12 long years, has finally come to an end. Now, as part of this proposed plea deal, because yes, there is always a plea deal, with the U.S. Justice Department, Assange will plead guilty to one felony for conspiring to unlawfully obtain and disseminate classified information related to U.S. national defense. The deal grants him credit for time served while awaiting trial in the U.K.'s Belmarsh prison. That means that Assange will avoid any further prison time. Now, it is not signed, sealed, and delivered just yet. Assange still needs to appear in court Wednesday in the Northern Mariana Islands. So what is the catch here? The most persecuted journalist in the world, and so deeply hated by U.S. lawmakers and the intelligence community, and now they're done? We have a full lineup joining the show today. We're joined by international correspondent Manila Chan, senior research fellow at the Global Policy Institute, George Zamweli, and CIA whistleblower and host of The Whistleblowers, John Kiriakou. Guys, thank you for being here. John, let's start with you. Your initial thoughts when you heard this news, as I mentioned, there has to be a catch here. There is a plea deal involved. But what were your thoughts that Julian Assange is finally free?
My initial thought was that it wasn't a shocking development. What the shocking development was that he was moving onward to the Federal District Court for the Northern Mariana Islands, of all things. Of course, that is the Federal District Court that is nearest the territory of Australia. We know that there had been negotiations ongoing between the Justice Department and Julian's lawyers for at least 6 months, and this really came down to a face-saving exercise. On the one hand, Julian said very adamantly that he would not be responsible for any future prosecution of a journalist under the Espionage Act. That was not going to be laid on him. And then at the same time, the Justice Department had to placate the CIA and the FBI, which were deemed to be the so-called victims in this case. They finally came to an agreement, I think, honestly, because this is an election year. This is something that the White House wanted to just go away. And there was great pressure from the Australian government.
Yeah, what a ridiculous idea, George, that the CIA yes. and the FBI are the victims of what? Of being exposed by WikiLeaks, of being exposed by Julian Assange. And truly what they say is you've released this important classified information of them committing crimes around the world. And yet the only person who's in trouble, of course, for 12 years has been Julian Assange. What say you?
Well, you're exactly right. And of course, as we know, Julian Assange is a publisher. And it has always been axiomatic in First Amendment law, which is that the First Amendment protects a publisher. I mean, the one who supposedly steals the information, he is legally vulnerable. But the person who actually publishes it is, however, protected by the First Amendment. That's always been axiomatic. And it was unfortunate in the case of Assange that this was changed. And they went after him and therefore obviously threatened the First Amendment. I tend to think that it is to do with this upcoming election. I think Biden wanted to get this issue off the agenda. It rallies some of his radicals who are not very happy with him, particularly over his stance on Israel and Gaza. And this is going to, you know, keep them happy. Well, he's done something for the cause of journalism. It's taken away an issue from Trump as well. Trump could have used that and embraced the kind of a libertarian issue. Hey, well, we need to release Julian Assange. So that issue has been taken away from Trump. So I think there's political calculation on the Biden administration's part.
Yeah, a couple of interesting things there. By the way, you know, you mentioned, of course, that in the past, the person who is the journalist who receives the stolen information is never prosecuted. That obviously changed here. Of course, the argument that was made by the Department of Justice is that he was part of this by actually coaching Bradley Manning, now Chelsea Manning, on how to do that. But Manila, I want to go into this point everyone keeps bringing up about election year, Washington, D.C. Now, Trump had been on the campaign trail, and he was saying on the campaign trail that he was going to pardon Julian Assange. Now, all of a sudden, this happens. By the way, he could still pardon him because there is a plea deal here where he has to plead guilty to a crime.
So, Ben, we have heard from Donald Trump explicitly saying as of late that he would pardon Julian Assange, which, like you said, he absolutely can do if he were to win another term in the White House. We've also heard from RFK Jr. as well, saying on day one that he would give Assange not only the pardon, but have all those charges dropped to begin with, and there would ultimately be nothing to drop at that point, right? So I think here in the Beltway, Joe Biden is so wildly unpopular, losing major numbers within minority groups left and right, losing major numbers with progressives and certainly independents and people that are somewhere in the middle because of, as George Samueli said, his stance on Gaza, his stance on Ukraine has lost a lot of people in the middle. And I think this is a Hail Mary attempt to try to boost those numbers. I don't think the Biden administration is sincere in that they care about this journalist's well-being, this man being persecuted. They don't care about the First Amendment. They don't care about journalists' rights. They don't care about that because they continue to pursue him, piggybacking right off of Donald Trump's administration's campaign against him, piggybacking on then Barack Obama's campaign against Julian Assange. So I don't think any of this is sincere. And I feel like we should be looking out for a catch.
Yeah, I agree with you. And John, even to that point, look, Trump goes around saying that he would consider pardoning Julian Assange. You were in the White House for 4 years. You didn't pardon him during that time. You didn't do anything to help Julian Assange. And Biden obviously didn't care. And as Manila rightly says, Obama didn't care either, right? And so what we've seen is for years, administrations have not cared. And yet suddenly in this moment, now they say, yeah, but we also get a win here in that you admit that you committed a crime, right? Now, you don't have to serve any more time in prison, but you admit that you committed a crime. And the truth is, John, Julian Assange did not commit a crime. He did not break the law, and he's been persecuted all this time, having committed no crime.
Yeah, you've hit it right on the head. And I'm smiling because, you know, I've been in Washington for 42 years, Ben, and I think I'm savvy enough to understand the way the city works. And what we saw today was really vintage Washington. On the one hand, it was Donald Trump's administration that charged Julian Assange in the first place. Now Donald Trump is talking about pardoning Julian Assange were he to be elected president again. But he can do that. He can get away with that because his position is that he was under pressure from the likes of Mike Pompeo and Mike Pence to move forward with charges against Julian Assange. Early this morning, Mike Pence tweeted that this deal with Assange was a travesty. That was his word. It was a travesty, and that Assange should have been extradited to the United States and imprisoned for his so-called crime against the national security. But then you look at the strongest statements of support that we saw today on Twitter, elsewhere in public, in support of Julian Assange. They were from the likes of Tucker Carlson, of Rand Paul, the Republican senator from Kentucky, of Congressman Thomas Massey, the Libertarian Republican representative from Kentucky. So those on the right and those on the progressive left are unanimous in their support for Julian Assange. You're also right, though, about the fact that Joe Biden doesn't care about Julian Assange. just like Barack Obama didn't care about Julian Assange. They could have done something about this case over the course of 12 years, and they never did. But it's an election year, and now it's not an issue anymore. It's gone away. So in this funny way, everybody except the neoconservatives and the neoliberals wins. The conservative populist right wins. They're happy. The progressive left wins. They're happy. Julian is free. He's happy. And the only people who don't like it are the likes of General Clapper and Mike Pence. And I think official Washington can live with that.
George, we're getting close to a break, but I want to throw another question to you before we hit that, which is simply this. In 1 minute, can you just tell me, what do you think is the reason for this in terms of the political aspects? Simply because of this. I don't see this moving anybody in terms of the political cycle. No votes are going to flow either way over Julian Assange, I wouldn't think. So what is a deeper reason in Washington that they might have done this?
Well, I think there may be a few votes. Look, it will be a very close election. And in a very close election, a handful of votes could decide it. And if there are libertarians who might be persuaded to vote for Biden, or there might be some radicals within the Democratic Party who might actually show up to vote because of this, it could be decisive in the election. I mean, it's a toss-up which way this is going to go, and it's likely to be decided by a handful of votes in a number of key battleground states.
Yeah, it's a very interesting idea when you have such a small group of people who would actually be affected by this. And again, do those people even believe the sincerity of either candidate who's talked about Assange? But we'll talk about that more on the other side of this break, because when we come back, we're diving deep into the epic saga of the United States versus Julian Assange, from confinement to freedom. What is next for this controversial figure? We're going to talk about it with our panel. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back. I'm Ben Swan, in for Rick Sanchez. So let's take a deeper dive into the explosive revelations made by Julian Assange and WikiLeaks over the years. One of the most shocking videos came out of Iraq in 2007. It showed Iraqi journalists, including two Reuters staff, gunned down in cold blood by a U.S. attack helicopter. Take a look at this chilling footage they uncovered and the response that followed.
On fire.
Hey, Roger.
We regret the loss of innocent life, but this incident was promptly investigated, and there was never any attempt to cover up any aspect of this engagement.
Yeah, it was videos like those that had an enormous impact on the public's perception of the war in Iraq. But the work didn't stop there. In 2010, WikiLeaks released documents detailing the U.S. military's actions in Afghanistan and Iraq, exposing over 100,000 deaths, most of them civilian. And in 2011, the Guantanamo Bay files provided a critical look at the operations and decisions related to detainees at the U.S. military base. Those files shed light on multiple human rights abuses, sparking discussions about the closure of the detention camp and the legal rights of detainees. Take a listen to one survivor as he details the kind of treatment he faced.
I was sleep deprived. I was beaten till they broke my rib. I was not given food for a very long period of time. I was sexually assaulted on multiple occasions. Sleep deprivation, the first 70 days, no sleep.
Yeah, there's absolutely no question that WikiLeaks and Julian Assange absolutely changed the world in terms of the kind of reporting that they were doing, though many didn't want to even call them journalists. So let's bring back that panel now. Manila Chan, George Samueli, and John Kiriakou. And guys, listen, I got to tell you, you know, when you look at the impact that Julian Assange and WikiLeaks had, there's a reason that they were so hated, and certainly so hated Julian Assange himself by powerful people in this country. He embarrassed them. He humiliated them. So the question is this: what happens, Manila, to Julian Assange now? Do you think he's going to lay low, or does he go back and work at WikiLeaks and release more information?
Well, you know, you would hope that he continues his work. I would say he's the grandfather of alternative media and this kind of investigative journalism. And so many people in this industry have been inspired by his actions and his courageous fight against the chilling effects that the U.S. government was trying to implement here against the First Amendment and journalism as an industry as a whole. But, you know, Ben, after almost 15 years of effectively confinement for 15 years, I think he's got a lot of healing to do and a lot of trauma to work through, including missing all this time with his children. His children are about the same age as my son, and I couldn't imagine being away from my children, never being able to hold them for this long. So I think, first and foremost, I hope he gets that moment. He gets to be with his wife, gets to be with his children, hug them, hold them, do some healing, and then get right back to it and hold power to account. But I think the whole world would understand if he had to take a step back and take some time, lick some wounds, and get on with this difficult task of being the godfather of alternative media.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And certainly, George, to Manila's point, there is a certain level of brokenness, certainly, that I'm sure Julian Assange has endured. The truth is this, let's be honest. Most of us, myself included, I thought that Julian Assange would die in prison. I thought they were going to kill him, and they didn't even care if he ever saw a trial. They thought he was going to just die in prison awaiting trial. And so he's able to emerge from that. What do you think happens with him next?
No, I agree with you. I also thought he would die in prison. I tend to think that, you know, he's after he begins the physical and mental recovery, you know, he's somebody who is intellectually vigorous. He's intellectually curious. I would find it difficult to believe that he's just going to settle down to a quiet life, you know, just mowing the lawn and pottering around in the yard. I think he's going to get back into the work that he had done in the past. And I think that he will be an important and influential figure. I mean, maybe not for about 12 months or so, but I think he will emerge as a very major figure and will be a continually influential and energetic proponent for alternative journalism.
It'll be interesting to see how, depending on who wins the election, that impacts what he does. John, I got to ask you a question here. Listen, I love WikiLeaks. I'm got nothing bad to say about them. I think they do amazing work, and they've done amazing work for a long time. But can we be honest here? WikiLeaks has not been WikiLeaks without Julian Assange, right? Without him, they've tried to continue
to do
that same work, but it has not been the same. Does Julian Assange coming out of prison make WikiLeaks great again?
I think it makes WikiLeaks greater again. You know, keep in mind also that WikiLeaks, it's not like you carry a membership card to be a member of WikiLeaks. And it's not just, you know, an organization based in Iceland. It's spread out all over the world. There are people who are associated with WikiLeaks in two dozen countries around the world. They have mirror servers all over the world. But you're right. They're not breaking stories like Vault 7 today. They're not breaking stories like the collateral murder video today. But I really believe that with Julian Free, even if Julian is not necessarily directly involved in whatever forthcoming investigations happen to take place, that WikiLeaks will come back. Also keep in mind that WikiLeaks has a great deal of money. Now, that money was intended, it was donated by people over the last several years. That money was intended to be used to pay for Julian's defense. That's no longer necessary. And frankly, that's money that could be spent on investigations. That I look forward to very much.
Absolutely. I think that's exactly right. But I also think, and John, I'll stay with you for a second, but I also think there is something else that's happening here too, which is that when you look at what's happened with WikiLeaks, again, it's a different time. 2010, 2011, 2012, 2014, right? Video was different at the time. The internet was a different place. I know that's hard to believe that 10 years ago, 14 years ago, the internet was vastly different than it is right now. Social media was vastly different, but it is. So we'll hit each one of you with this very quickly, but how does the change in what has happened in just 12 years in the time that Julian Assange has been in prison, John, start with you, how does that impact whether or not he has the same kind of impact he once had?
Yeah, I think that information is far more diffuse now. So it's not going to be sent and around Julian Assange, as strong of a personality as he is, it just by its nature, you're right, the internet has changed, and by its nature, it's going to be more diffuse. Also, Julian's going to be in Australia, and Australia is a Five Eyes country. The Five Eyes have an agreement that any citizen of those five countries, the US, the UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, who's been convicted of a felony and who has spent more than 18 months in prison, is not allowed to travel to any of those other countries. So Julian's going to have to do whatever work he intends to do from Australia, and that's going to make it even harder to operate.
Yeah, and Australia is not exactly a bastion of freedom right now. But, George, let me ask you. Same thing. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, this is a different landscape. It's a different look. And certainly, even the kinds of videos that were released at the time, it's just a different world. There was no Instagram at this time, hard to believe. And if it was barely used. It's just a different space that he's coming back into now. How does he adjust?
It absolutely is a different space. And there's also the issue that, you know, we need to talk about, that the government has in a way succeeded in intimidating and terrorizing potential whistleblowers. And I mean, that was really the staple of WikiLeaks,
yes,
that people, you know, had information would provide it to WikiLeaks. But what they did to Julian Assange, and then before that with Manning, was really brutal. I mean, it was been horrific what's been done to Julian Assange. That will be a lesson. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anyone who's got information to release and wants to pass it on to WikiLeaks, you know, anybody who's got a brain in his head is going to think twice before, taking such a risk and, you know, thinking about, well, do I want this kind of fate for myself? So I think that's a problem that WikiLeaks will have to address.
And that's such a great point. 14 years is the span of time between Barack Obama becoming president and today. One of the guys sitting on this panel right now was one of those who has been charged as a whistleblower, right, during that period of time. There is an interesting fact a lot of people in Manila may not know, which is that during his term as president, Barack Obama persecuted and prosecuted more whistleblowers than every other presidential administration combined. So to George's point, there is an attempt, a chilling effect to wipe out whistleblowers, to silence them and to create fear. Maybe it's part of the reason that WikiLeaks wasn't as strong without Assange, wasn't just Assange, Manila. Maybe it was also the fact that they intimidated, harassed, and prosecuted every whistleblower they could find and completely ignored whistleblower protections.
Absolutely, Ben. That chilling effect, I would say, took place years ago. As you said, 12, 13 years ago, nobody imagined Instagram or TikTok or all of these things, and the world has changed. The landscape has changed since Julian was first holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy. But at the same time, this industry has changed vastly. That chilling effect took place years ago. The media landscape has changed entirely, where everybody at this point in mainstream media is there to effectively serve the government, serve the United States, parrot the talking points of the State Department, and and move along and advance all the lines of whatever it is the U.S., and we can call it the deep state, are trying to achieve, whatever those goals may be. This is where the place is of U.S. mainstream media these days, and I would say the release of Julian Assange, I would say, could be the triumphant comeback, I hope, of real journalism. So that's the best we can hope for once he does some healing, Ben.
About 30 seconds left. We can't talk about whistleblowers without talking to the whistleblower. John, give you the final word on all of this.
Well, I think this is a really wonderful development, but I'd like to leave our viewers with this note. This fight is not only not over, it is just beginning. As you said, Ben, Barack Obama was responsible for prosecuting three times as many national security whistleblowers as all previous presidents combined. The Espionage Act in the United States does not allow for an affirmative defense. You can't go into court and say why you did what you did, and national security whistleblowers are not protected by the Whistleblower Protection Act. So this fight is really just.
And the fight just begins. John Kiriakou, Manila Chan, George Zamweli, thank you all so much. That is our show. I'm Ben Swan, and we will see you next time covering stories that have a direct impact.